Now, by the way, as we do this, we're going to talk a lot about the Catholic Church, because you have to remember that the colonial experience of the colonies in America were 150 years, if that, past the Protestant Reformation of Luther and Calvin and Zwingli and several of the others. And so in terms of Christendom, the Catholic Church is still the biggest game in town. And the Pope's influence, even over Protestants, was quite significant, and so we'll talk about that as we look at the colonial experience. Georgia. Most people think that Georgia was founded as a prison colony, that they took a bunch of prisoners, loaded them in a ship, and sent them over. Not true. They were worse than prisoners. They were lawyers. Business folk. The colony was established by James Oglethorpe. Oglethorpe was a member of Parliament, who was a member in good standing, and he was on the Colonial Committee of Parliament. You have to understand, Virginia Colony, Maryland Colony, the New England colonies, they were all essentially administered by the Crown in England. Now, we say that, and that's not entirely true. They were administered by the Crown, but fairly quickly it became obvious that governing the colonies from London wasn't going to work, because it was anywhere between 4 to 6 month sea voyage to get communication back and forth. And as slow as politics is, it needs to move slightly faster than that. And so very quickly, the Parliament had established a policy of what we call benign neglect. As long as nothing bad was happening, and as long as tax revenues were coming back, the colonies could govern and administer themselves. If there were Indian incursions, if the French came in, if the Spanish came in, then the British government would get involved in troop activity, and finances, but by and large, the colonies were left to govern themselves. And that worked out largely fine. Oglethorpe, however, became very concerned about the North Carolina and South Carolina colonies, because they had three things that Oglethorpe thought mitigated against good colonial government: rum, cotton, and slaves. Oglethorpe thought that if you allowed rum into a colony, it caused dissipation among the colonists and created bad relationship with the Indians. He was right. He thought cotton was a plague on the mid-Atlantic colonies, because if you've got cotton, you need a large labor force, and a large labor force means slaves. Oglethorpe agreed with the Pope that slavery was a blight and that good Christians should not be involved in it. He was a voice in the wilderness in Parliament. Parliament didn't much care about the slave trade, partly because England had been involved in the slave trade. Oglethorpe establishes a Georgia colony in 1723. England had been involved in the African slave trade since the early 1600s. And in fact, the earliest English slave trading was in the 1540s. So England, we don't much care about the slave trade. Now, the English Parliament recognized that enslaving the Indians largely didn't work for a basic reason. The Indians could escape, go over the hill, and rejoin their tribe. If you bring Africans in, they got to cross a whole ocean. They don't know anybody. The Indians don't like the Africans. The English colonists don't like the Africans. There's nowhere where they could go. And the long sea voyage was designed to break the will of the African slaves they were bringing over. So basically, Africans made better slaves than the Indians did. And the colonists were making a significant amount of money on cotton. Because one of the things other thing people don't realize is that 1699 to 1718 throughout Europe was a boll weevil infestation. And so Europe lost large chunks of their cotton crop, and the American colonies were able to step in and make enormous amounts of money with cotton and slaves. So Oglethorpe wanted to establish a Georgia colony to prove to Parliament that small businessmen establishing a colony to do three things. He wanted to make wine, wanted to grow silk, and he wanted to do some rice. And based on that, no rum, no cotton, no slaves, we would be more successful than North and South Carolina, we'd make a lot more money, and we'd prove that North and South Carolina should be plowed into the sea. Oglethorpe did not like the governor of South Carolina. Called him all sorts of, unchristian names. And the governor of South Carolina thought much the same. In fact, where South Carolina wanted the Georgia colony to be founded was basically where modern day Savannah is where they wound up, and that's not where they wanted. The South Carolinians wanted the Georgia colony right on the South Carolina border because they wanted protection from the Indians. Oglethorpe didn't want to go there because he didn't want to be the break guard, and so he wound up in Savannah. Franklin Springs, that's it. Franklin Springs and Dahlonega, which is South Carolina touches Tennessee, Georgia comes up in contact. That's where they wanted him, up there where the gold and all that was. Oglethorpe wasn't having anything to do with that, and so he forged a series of letters from the colonial governor in South Carolina, which allowed him to plant the colony in Savannah. By the time they found out there wasn't anything to do about it, because he had 1,100 colonists already planted in Savannah. And so there you have it. Ah, forgery. Right from the beginning, yeah. And the thing that drove South Carolina crazy was Oglethorpe was far better at this than the colonial government of South Carolina was. Not only did he establish Savannah by forgery, but he also was able to drag some of the sea trade from Charleston down to Savannah. Because remember, when Savannah was established, the original colonists, there were 125 of them, and Charleston was already a growing, thriving metropolis of 1800. But it was the major sea point to get into the southern colonies. And again, through a series of forged letters, Oglethorpe managed to trick about a third of that sea trade to Savannah, which established the port, which brought more people in, which got Savannah growing faster than Charleston, and created bad feelings between South Carolina and Georgia that persist to this day. But give you an idea of Oglethorpe. These are there's a wonderful webpage that's finally posted a lot of Oglethorpe's diaries. Now, I will warn you, Oglethorpe was a man who did not know the value of a comma or, I don't know, the end of a sentence. Okay, so he's talking about, it is highly for the honor and advancement of our holy religion to assign a new country to the poor Germans, who have left their own for the sake of the truth. Now, the Germans that he's talking about are the Salzburgers. The Salzburgers were Lutherans. Oglethorpe was a very good Episcopalian, and he didn't want the Lutherans in Savannah. But what he did was he said, okay, we'll carve out a chunk of land south of Savannah and allow the Salzburgers to move there. But notice how he says that. It is highly for the advancement of our religion, and what he means Protestantism, to assign a country for the poor Germans who have left their own for the sake of the truth. It will be powerful encouragement to martyrs and confessors of this kind to hold fast their integrity when they know their case not to be desperate in this world. Nor need we fear that the King of Prussia will be able to engross them all. We shall have a share of them if we contribute cheerfully to their removal. The Society for the Propagation of the Gospel in Foreign Parts has gloriously exalted themselves on this occasion. They have resolved to advance such a sum of money to the trustees for the colony of Georgia as will enable them to provide for 700 poor Salzburgers. This is laying a foundation for the conversion of the heathen at the same time that they snatch a great number of poor Christians out of the danger of apostasy. 'Tis to be hoped this laudable example will be followed by private persons who may thus at once do much for the glory of God and for the wealth and trade of Great Britain. Now, the phrase private persons is significant because the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel in Foreign Parts is a British government agency. And all of the colonies established under authority of the crown had to establish a division of the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel in the colonies. Separation of church and state? I don't think so. From the crown to establish this colony or this town so that the Salzburgers could move there. And remember the important point here. The Salzburgers they're Prussian. Germany doesn't exist yet. They are called Germans, but there is no country of Germany just yet. They are under either Austria or Prussia, and in this case, they're escaping religious oppression from Prussia. The Salzburgers were. The Salzburgers were basically the descendants of Calvin's doctrines. And so they were... Say it again. No, he didn't care. He just wanted them because they were breaking away and trying to purify their religion, just as one of his reasons was to demonstrate the flaws of Episcopalianism. But he didn't want them in Savannah because of political conflict. He wanted them to establish their own colony so that they could pursue religious doctrine on their... He was going to let them stay Lutheran, and which was also remarkable for a colonial governor, because a lot of these... Oh, thank you. There he is. There's my man. And by the way, this is interesting. Oglethorpe was elected as a member of Parliament at age 18. He gets the idea from the Georgia colony. He's 32 when he settles his colony. So young guy getting together, buys a boat, gets his 125 colonists, and over they sail on a boat called the Anne. And the Anne makes four more trips back and forth, bringing colonists before finally sinks. Oglethorpe was not wealthy. He was rich. Yeah, his father was a member of Parliament. His grandfather was an industrialist. He had money. He had lots of money. But he didn't want to bring his fellow rich people over because he said rich people are lazy. What he wanted was good, hardworking, middle-class lawyers and small businessmen. That's who he wanted. He did not want farmers because farmers... One, didn't know a lot about colonial government, and two, they'd want slaves. He wanted to establish a colony of small businessmen. He wanted a merchant colony rather than an agricultural colony. And so that's the people he brought. Now, they did not bring grapes with them to grow, to make the wine, because all of the reports that they had from Georgia was that they've got these humongous grapes that are great for winemaking. Well, no. Georgia does not have grapes. They have muscadines. Muscadines. Muscadines are like grapes, except they're too sweet, they convert to alcohol too quickly, and it creates a very bitter-tasting alcoholic beverage. And it has much higher content than the wine he wanted to make. So, that doesn't work out. And by the time they get the grapevines over and get them planted, a lot of political stuff had happened. He was going to make silk. George has got a great climate for silk, and so he gets the silk, the mulberry bushes, he gets the silkworms, he brings them over, they plant them, they start growing. In 1726, they get the first crop of silk, and that's when they discover that they had been done dirty by their silk trader. He wanted to grow the fine silk like grows in the Orient, so that they could take that business away and that England could become a trafficker in fine, light, pretty silks. They brought the wrong silkworms. And what they had was a very heavy industrial type silk, which still has commercial value, but not nearly the money that the silk competing with Asia would have brought. And so that became a problem. He makes a trip back to England in 1737. While he is gone, the colonists plant two crops. They are tobacco and cotton. Tobacco and cotton are labor intensive, which means that you need slaves, yes. So, we got rum, we got slaves, we got cotton, and now we got tobacco. The only thing that did work was rice. Rice is labor-intensive, but the African slave didn't have the agricultural skill. One of the reasons we brought slaves over for cotton and tobacco was they knew how to grow it. Rice was a different ballgame, and it was harder. Haiti was able to make rice work with African slaves, but that's because they'd invested a lot of effort training them. The colonies, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, that did a lot of rice growing, actually brought in agriculturalists from Asia to show us how to grow it. And that actually worked in Georgia. Rice is still a large part of the Georgia economy. But, so while Oglethorpe is away, the mice will play. He comes back in 1738, and he sees Savannah is dominated by slave trade, tobacco, and cotton. You got to admire the man. Savannah is his baby. How many of you have been to Savannah, Georgia? See if you can find an image of early Savannah. Oglethorpe understood the connection between community and wealth. And he designed, everybody who was in Savannah worked in a farm in some form or another, but they all lived in the city proper, and he laid the city out in a very particular grid fashion. Nobody's property was larger than 30 feet by 60 feet. He had the streets all laid out square, and then the surrounding farmland was allotted by a family lottery. The purpose of this was to emphasize equality of all citizens. No matter how rich or how poor you are, this is the plot of land you have to work with, and this is the amount of land you're allotted in the city. And the city would continue to grow in this grid fashion, well, up until about the 1840s, when it became kind of the southern mess that it is now. But if you've been to the city proper, you notice that it's laid out very cleanly in this nice, wonderful grid fashion. And that was Oglethorpe's plan even before they landed. Now, Oglethorpe made a number of treaties with the native Indians, and the Indians helped him lay out Savannah. He maintained good trade with the Indians until he left. Hold on here. Yeah, second one from the left. Okay. Actually, yeah, we got a number of good ones here. Now, this is what Savannah looks like in 1735. You notice that they've cleared out all of this wood space here. Wonderful access to the river. They've already got a port. Yes, it's a steep cliff like that, but they put a number of steps and docks there. Oglethorpe was very proud of this. The Indians helped them clear out much of that land in exchange for a number of English products, rifles, muskets. Muskets, because rifles hadn't been invented yet. Horses. The Indians loved horses. And you can see the grid pattern laid out here. The streets all run very parallel, the side streets that way. And you can see the grid layer with a small alley between the houses. But that was, and this, yeah, that's Oglethorpe's drawing right there. Oglethorpe was a city planner before the term even existed. And he worked hard to develop it. When he came back in 1738 and realized what they had done, he worked hard until 1740 when he realized that the colony was going to be slaves, rum, and booze. And in one of my favorite stories, he walks to the edge of the city, wipes the dirt off of his feet, says, "God condemn you, I will never return," and he heads farther south and establishes two other cities, and before he's finally recalled by the royal government. Of course, at that time, he was in his late 50s, had invested enormous amounts of energy, and was in poor health when he came back. His story is not unique. I mean, Oglethorpe worked hard at the religious liberties of the Georgia colony. But remember, Georgia was not established specifically as a religious colony. It was established as an economic experiment. And yet, religion so imbued the Georgia experience that by the time you get to the revolutionary period, it is incredibly religiously diverse. Methodists have become the dominant religion in Georgia, but you've got Lutherans, Methodists, a large number of Presbyterians, Anabaptists have come there. There's a small group of Puritans who have hung on to Puritanism up through the Revolution. And again, not a unique thing. South Carolina, even though South Carolina was relatively corrupt at this point, the colonial beginnings of South Carolina as another economic colony have tremendous religious roots in it. Part of the Charter of South Carolina says that the purpose of South Carolina is to develop the land, promote agriculture, and convert the Indians. And that's a story that you see repeated throughout the American experience. And in fact, South Carolina had one of the earliest printing presses in the mid-Atlantic states, and the very first thing that the government authorized to be printed were Bibles. Pennsylvania, the first thing William Penn authorized were Bibles. When the Government Printing Office of the United States Congress was established in 1792, they printed Bibles to be distributed throughout the colonies to be used in the public schools. And by public schools at that point, they meant colleges and universities. So the idea of separation of church and state, which we'll talk about, that's a relatively new idea. The Founding Fathers had no problem mixing the two. And one of the things we'll take a look at is the early congressional delegation. People forget that the rotunda of the Capitol building on Sundays was a church service, and members of Congress went there and worshiped on a regular basis. If you've been to the Capitol and you look closely, the friezes and paintings on the wall are multiple religious icons. You go to the Library of Congress, Moses here, Elijah here as you walk through the front door. Well, if you've never been to the Library of Congress, you really need to go. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous building. Jim, have you ever been to the Library of Congress? Yeah. And when you get into the rotunda where you actually do the research and you look up and you see all of these Greek philosophers, and as you look around and you see Venus over here and Athena over here and Socrates and Cicero, but if you look back behind you over the doorway, is you have Moses and Elijah over the entryway. They never point those out, by the way. I've noticed the tour guides never point those out. This is who we are. Oglethorpe, who's got Salzburgers there, who they have some religious conflict with, and yet he says, we're going to carve out a colony and let them do their thing. 700 initially came as the colony became, as the little county of Salzburg became established. More Salzburgers came over. Oglethorpe actually arranged transport for a number of them fleeing persecution in Prussia. And you know, and again, this is a story that's repeated throughout. William Penn, founder of Pennsylvania, I guess we would call him a Quaker. The term didn't exist at the time. But a marvelous Christian man who signed treaties with the Indians, and when it became politically expedient to break those treaties, he refused to do it. And Pennsylvania had the most congenial relationship with the Indian population, you know, up until about 80 years after Penn's passing. This is who we are. This is what our start is. And you know, Hebrews 12, 1 and 2. Therefore, we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. And who are those witnesses that surround us? James Oglethorpe, William Penn, John Adams, Samuel Adams. That's who he's talking about here. Let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Verse 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. This verse is quoted by those who are advocating West Virginia's separation from Virginia. And by the way, West Virginia wanting to separate from Virginia is not just a Civil War thing. West Virginians didn't like Virginians for years before that. Sort of like the Piedmont versus the upstate in Georgia, or the Piedmont versus the upstate in South Carolina, or East Tennessee versus West Tennessee. Most of our states just kind of have sections that don't like each other. Who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is another verse that is quoted regularly by the founding fathers, by our colonial forebears. And so that's what we're going to be looking at over the next several weeks. What was it our ancestors believed? What was it they wanted America to be? Oglethorpe wanted Georgia to be a city on a hill. He wanted to be a model of Christian moderation and Christian decorum. The fact that nobody else in the colony wanted that does not hinder the fact that his idea was, let's make this a Christian community and a testimony. Let's see. The increase of our people on this fruitful continent will probably in due time have a good effect on the natives. If we do not shamefully neglect their conversion, if we were moderately attentive to our duty in this head, we have no reason to doubt of success. The Spaniard at this day has many Christians as he has subjects in America. We may more reasonably hope to make converts and good subjects of the Indians in amity with us, by using them well when we grow numerous in their neighborhood, than the Spaniards could have expected to be done by their inexpressible cruelties, which raised the utmost aversion in the minds of the poor Indians against them in their religion. One of their own friars, who had not relinquished his humanity, tells you what he thinks of the Spaniards, tells us of an Indian prince who, just as the Spaniards were about to murder him, was importuned by one of their religious to become a Christian. The priest told him much of heaven and of hell, of joy and misery eternal. The prince desired to be informed which of the two places was allotted for the Spaniards. The Indian prince wanted to know the Spaniards. Heaven, quoth the priest, says the prince, I am resolved not to go there. How different from this was the reflection of an Indian chief in Pennsylvania. What is the matter, says he, with us, the Indians, that we are sick in our own air, and these strangers be well? 'Tis as if they were sent hither to inherit our lands in our stead. But the reason is plain, says the Indian. They love the great God, and we do not. So in the South, the Indian would rather be in hell than in heaven with the Spaniards. And in Pennsylvania, the Indians wanted to know why they were sick, and we'll touch on that, and why the Europeans were healthy. And his conclusion was they worship God, and the Indians didn't. Now, that just tells you the impact of the missionary influence in Pennsylvania. And that's who we're from. Much of us in West Virginia can trace our roots to Pennsylvania, me in particular, because that's where my grandfather and his family are from. But, you know, West Virginians can trace their roots to Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania colonial experience. Any questions, any thoughts? Oh, well, I tell you, we have been poorly taught on our ancestors, and our kids are even worse taught. And when we forget what these people had in mind, we forget what the American experience is. Oh, yeah, yeah. But you knew who he was. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is much harder to witness nowadays because when we were growing up, everybody knew who Jesus was and had a basic respect for religion. But nowadays, it's much harder. Kids either have no religious training at all or see religion in a negative light. Yeah. There's a lot with that. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, well, yeah. I had a friend in college who decided to experiment.